It's slightly likely that I may start coughing during the sermon. If that happens, you have a responsibility to begin applauding while the coughing is happening. And I'll cue you. So let's start off this sermon by getting a little personal. By show of hands, who's ever had their heart broken in here? Who's ever lost something they can never get back? Who's failed miserably at something they were sure would succeed? Cheery way to start a sermon, I know. As a minister, these kinds of things are my bread and butter. Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed minister, I definitely believe I have the answers to these problems. I've only been out of seminary for 5 years, so I'm still very close in time to all the magical answers they give you to fix the world's problems. Surely, I know the right prayer for heartbreak. And I definitely know what kind of offerings to make to the gods to fix miserable failures. And I have no doubt that a few good committee meetings will surely do the trick to recreate. You can tell I'm joking, but this is honestly what I believed for a few years. When something is broken, fix it. It's a very American can-do attitude that really seems like it should work. Heartbreak? Try a Tara Brach heartbreak meditation. Devastating loss? Try a gratitude practice. Find the silver lining. Unexpected failure? Well, you know. Do we have any Monty Python fans in the room? Anyone ever seen Life of Brian? It's the Monty Python take on Jesus' life, and one of my favorite scenes is when Brian, the Jesus character, is leaning out a hotel window in Jerusalem, trying to convince his followers that he's not really worth following. The people are shouting up at his window, "A blessing! A blessing!" To which he responds, "Listen, I've only got one or two things to say." They shout, "Tell us! Tell us both of them!" He becomes quite frustrated and says, "Look, you've got it all wrong. You don't need to follow me. You don't need to follow anybody. You've got to think for yourselves. You're all individuals." To which the crowd responds in unison, "Yes, we are all individuals." Except for one UU in the back who timidly says, "I'm not." But really, the scene that's most pertinent to our sermon today is the one in which Brian is hung up on the cross, facing his final hours, and begins to sing to his fellow crucified, "Always look on the bright side of life." This obviously elicits groans of anger from his audience, who realize that the man is absolutely off his rocker. Which was kind of what I began to experience to really terrible situations in people's lives just didn't work. Heartbreak meditations are great practice, but they don't unbreak your heart. Daily gratitude can sustain you, but sometimes just sustain you for facing another day in which failure is still real. And closed doors usually stay closed. What are we to do when there really is no bright side to life, at least not right now? And let's be honest, we are experiencing some pretty dark times as a species, a country, a planet. It's hard to see what is happening to this beautiful earth and her beautiful people and still be able to see the bright side of anything. But we're not without teachers who have shown us a path through this kind of darkness. In the Christian mythology, Mary of Magdalene is a woman cured of demons who then follows Christ as one of his most beloved and devoted disciples. She is there to the end, the crucifixion, the burial, the resurrection. Magdalena is mentioned 12 times in the scriptures more than any other disciple. When the Nag Hammadi Library of Gnostic Gospels was discovered in 1945, the previously unknown God who Jesus loved more than the rest, and the one who comforts the disciples in their grief. The Gnostic Gospels are, of course, the ones that got cut out when the Roman Empire co-opted this wild, queer faith of a radical social justice Jew as their own. So no wonder Mary Magdalene got left on the bench. Over the millennia, she has been many things to many people, never simple, never easy. Was she a poor woman with a bad case of demons? Was she a rich woman with money to spare for Jesus' travels? Was she a prostitute who poured expensive oil on Jesus' feet? Was she a humble repentant who changed her ways for the gentle Christ? Magdalene's name has been used to shame sexually promiscuous women, to coerce reluctant would-be converts as a re-purification trope for fallen girls. Like many women in history, she is pushed aside for men and men's visions. After all, the Vatican was built on the rock of Peter's bones, and it's only ever been men in there since the beginning. Well, with the possible exception of Pope Joan, but that's another story for another time. I think if we can discern anything from the twisty, turny interpretations of this woman, Mary Magdalene, it's that she was powerful. Powerful enough to cause the church and Christ's followers great discomfort. What was her power? I'm reminded of a very charming animated short film narrated by researcher Brené Brown about the difference between empathy and sympathy. One of which drives connection, the other of which creates disconnection. Empathy has four unique qualities which keep us connected to ourselves and to each other. First, empathy is about taking the perspective of the one who is suffering. The second quality is staying out of judgment, which is not easy since we usually love judgment so much. And I'm just talking about myself here, of course. The third is recognizing and honoring the emotions of the one who is suffering. I see your sadness. I see your pain. I see your broken heart. And fourth, empathy is about climbing down into the hole that the person has fallen into and bringing a candle down with you. Sympathy, on the other hand, is, ooh, that looks bad. As Brené Brown says, empathy is a choice and it's a vulnerable choice. We have to connect with something in ourselves that knows that feeling of pain and grief. Empathy never starts with, well, at least you still have your home. Well, at least you still have your job. Empathy is never a silver lining. It's always companionship in the dark storm. Empathy will help you batten the hatches, keep the fire lit, and try to make tea while the storm rages all around. Empathy is a being with in a way that changes everything. Which brings us back to the Magdalena and what makes her so powerful. Mary Magdalene is no meek, repentant woman who gave up her wild ways to follow Christ. She's no frivolous member of the wealthy class. She was and is a fierce and relentless empathy warrior. I might have to cue you in just a second. Magdalena was there through all of Christ's ministry and stayed by his side, even though it was a dismal failure. She was there as he carried his own cross to his own crucifixion. She stayed at the foot of the cross when he was crucified, and all the other disciples couldn't bear to look. What is it that she was doing there? She's leaning in with empathy. And I'm not talking about Sheryl Sandberg's lean in. I'm talking about Magdalene style leaning in. She is the one who keeps her eyes open and looks for the hard things. She looks for pain. She looks for loss. She looks for grief, and then she moves closer. This is an act of tremendous humility. In fact, the worse things got for Christ, the closer Magdalene came. And crucifixion is a terrible thing to endure and a terrible thing to witness. And yet, when all the other disciples left in horror, this woman stayed at the site of the execution to the very end. 3 days after Christ was buried, Magdalena went to anoint his body, something which I can't imagine was going to be a very pleasant task. But she was unafraid. And she knew something the many Buddhas also know, which is that the scariest things will transform into the greatest blessings if only we are willing to witness. Like the Magdalena, Buddhist philosophy teaches us what Brené Brown also says, that true healing comes from empathy. Real transformation happens when we stop judging, when we let go of fear, and when we lean in closer, the harder it gets. And then, when we're moving towards the most difficult thing, is when the miracle happens. Resurrection, however you experience it, renewed life and a beauty discovered and a vitality deeper than anything that can come before. So what does all this talk of the Magdalena and Jesus and Buddhas and Brené Brown have to do with us today? What are we to do with these stories, and how are we to respond to what is happening in our world and lives, which almost seems too great to bear? All I can say is that I've been calling upon the Magdalena every time I open the newspaper, every time I get the call that another brilliant human being has committed suicide, every time mental or physical illness makes it impossible for someone to live easily in this world. I call on the Magdalena when I learn that our oceans are now biological deserts, that nuclear bomb proliferation is happening faster and faster, that there are only 3 individuals left in an endangered species, that the gap between the wealthy and everyone else is astronomically larger by the minute. I call on the Magdalena. And I ask her, help me to see this with courageous eyes. Help me to see the hardest thing that has ever happened. And help me to stay as it's happening. Give me the courage to stay and to be unafraid of what I will see. Magdalena's promise is that if we are able to witness these things the way she teaches us, we have some small chance of actually transforming them. That if we have the humility to take advantage of being on this planet at this time and really be willing to see who we are and what we've done, we just might be able to change it. But it takes that much. The full willingness to see with love, courage, and hope. To not look away, but instead to bless the hardest things in our lives with our full attention, a soft heart, even those ugliest things into our greatest gifts. May your life be blessed with the vision of the Magdalena.